Well, good morning, Nexus, and Happy New Year, 2021. We made it, eh? We made it through whatever that year was, 2020, but we're still in this pandemic. But Happy New Year to you. Congratulations on making it through 2020. What a challenging year. But here we are, and on the cusp of a new year, I'm really excited about what's coming up the next few months. I'm hoping to have some others in to help me with some teaching over the next few months. But what I really want to do is focus on some issues of community, and I want to do that with kind of a dual approach, so to speak. I want to help us work through the book of Acts, but I also want to combine that series with something on wolves, the animal. And I know I'm at risk of sort of pulling another pirate series by doing something on wolves, but hopefully the two will interlock well and we'll get to some magic. Hopefully some magic can happen through this. So that's my hope for 2021, at least the first half of the year here. So that's where we're heading. But this morning, I want to sort of introduce us to community stuff by asking a few questions of us. And I don't know about you, but throughout COVID, I think one of the things that surprised me most is just how narrow my world has become, how sort of shortened things have become. It's like, I don't know about you, but for me, I don't see a lot of people besides family and some close friends. Like, my world has really shrunk during COVID. And as an introvert, that's not always bad, right? I mean, life without kind of all the social expectations, to be honest, it's felt kind of refreshing. But I want to ask the question this morning, what is lost when we lose social expectations of us? And specifically for churches, what is lost for us as a church when there's not that social expectation to show up on a Sunday morning? You know, throughout this pandemic, I've heard from a number of people at Nexus, you know what, this is great. I can watch TV in my PJs, have a cup of coffee. It's so comfy and cozy. And listen, I've loved that as well. But part of me is wondering, as this drags on into its like 10th month, what are we losing by only doing church online? And sure, there's a lot of things that we can do, I suppose, kind of in the same sort of way online. But what do we lose by that being together, by seeing each other in person on Sunday mornings? What is lost when we're not expected to physically show up and be with each other? Well, this takes us into the realm of community, and I want to start by thinking about that through the lens of falling in love with something. I mean, have you ever fallen in love with something? It could be an object, a person, an idea, whatever it is. Fallen in love with something and only to find out later on it's kind of not all that it's cracked up to be. Like, you kind of fall head over heels for something, and then, you know, down the road it's like, huh, I don't quite have the same feelings as I used to for that thing, that person, that object. And I don't know about you, but I've fallen out of love with lots of things over time, but trying to pinpoint the exact moment it happens, that's not so easy. And yet I can remember the exact moment that my wife, Kristen, fell out of love with me. Whatever notions, romantic notions were still with us in our first year of marriage, I specifically remember the moment that she fell out of love for me. And this is how it happened. It was in November. We had been married for barely 4 or 5 months. And November for me is always a bit of a downer month. And so I wanted to rent one of my favorite movies, JFK, Oliver Stone's JFK. It's a phenomenal movie, but it's a 3-hour marathon. And so I knew I was in for a long haul with this. And you know me, I like to do my snacking. I like to do it up well, particularly for a good movie, a long movie. And so I pulled out all the stops, chips, chocolate, chewables. I had them all. I was in for the long haul that night. And I remember Kristen was like, well, I think I'm going to head to bed. I said, perfect. I'm going into this movie. I'll see you. I'll be in bed in 3 hours in a bit. And, you know, over the course of the movie, I remember getting hot and, you know, feeling uncomfortable. The tension of the film was just palpable. And so slowly over time, article of clothing began to be lost, right? I take off my sweater, I'm eating chips, off goes the t-shirt. I mean, eventually at one point, I was sitting in the living room in just my underwear and my left sock. I don't know what happened. My right sock had come off sometime during the film. And I'd been eating chips, so there's chip crumbs all over me. I'm not at my tip-top best, you could say. And it's at that moment, it's late, it's about midnight. Kristen gets up from bed, she's going to the washroom, and I'll never forget the look on her face. She comes out of the washroom and looks at me there on my recliner chair, one sock, chip crumbs all over me. And she just looked at me, sort of rubbed her eyes, and she only made a simple noise. She just went, ugh. And she turned her head, went to the washroom, and went back to bed. And I could tell in that moment something had shifted. And when I asked her about it the next day, she was like, oh my goodness, I've never seen you look so bad, Brad. It was like some sort of weird postmodern art installation. Like, is this what man has evolved to become? I looked like a shaved gorilla, she said, sitting in front of flickering pixels on the television. It wasn't a flattering look. And in that moment, I could tell something had shifted. Whatever charm I had had over her before, it was gone. She had fallen out of love with me. The real work of love began that night. And you know, I think for many of us, as we get older, we fall out of love with things as well. And I think one of the big ones that we fall out of love with is the idea of community. I mean, when we're growing up, the idea of community, it's such this like phenomenal idea. It sounds so amazing. And we kind of fall head over heels searching for community, or we have experiences in life, whether it was college or high school or camp. We've got these moments in life that we remember, wow, that felt like true, genuine community. And we can spend a lot of our time after that looking for something similar. And the problem is, along the way, when we think about mission trips or camp or some sort of community that we experience sometimes earlier in life, is we can pick up these romanticized notions of community, and it's hard to shake that idea. And I mean, we even pick up these notions from scripture, right? It's hard not to read about the early church, look at the way they were doing community, and not think, my goodness, how come we can't have more of that? I mean, listen to the way the early church is described in Acts 2. It just sounds phenomenal. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. I mean, it's hard not to read a passage like that and think, my goodness, why can't I find that? These people, they're with each other every day. They're spending their money, making sure everyone's taken care of. Nobody has any needs. And it's like they're filled with awe and wonder. And it's like when you fall in love with the idea of community, it's often that sort of thing that we're looking for. And throughout the New Testament, there's also these things called the one another passages. In fact, the term one another is mentioned 59 times in the New Testament epistles. And these passages speak of what it means to be together, to be for one another. And they talk about unity with one another, extending love to one another, encouraging one another. And so there's this idealized notion, if we're not careful in Scripture, that can make it feel like we never have truly found the type of community that existed in the early church days. And in the early church, it's easy, if we just pick and choose passages, to ignore the gritty realities that were happening in these communities, the not so pretty stuff happening in community. But what happens, I think, so often is we can fall out of love with the idea of community because we just don't find that sort of thing anymore. And the dull reality of community is that it oftentimes looks a whole lot more the way that Richard Beck describes community. He calls and refers to community this way. Community is standing around drinking coffee with people when you'd rather be someplace else. I find that definition absolutely enthralling and yet bizarre. It's like community oftentimes looks like coffee and small talk. And when we realize a lot of times that that's what community looks like, it can be like, oh man, I thought I signed up for a revolution. This is community? And I think as this pandemic carries on, this is the temptation, the lure, if you will, of online church. It's like, well, I can basically get most of the stuff that I like and appreciate about church without the small talk. I can kind of just get what I like without doing the gritty, often dull work of just small talk. But what I want to suggest this morning, and the reason that I'm sort of want to talk about community, is to me, it's the thing that I've missed most throughout the pandemic. is those Sunday mornings where not the teaching or the music, those times where we're just chatting, saying hello over coffee. And I want to suggest this morning, perhaps overstating my case here, but the small talk is the revolution. And I know that might seem like, that's a grand claim. But I want to explore this idea of small talk, standing around in person together, having coffee, doing small talk. I want to explore that under three questions. What is small talk? What does it do? And why is it so important? Let's talk, what is small talk? Which seems like about the most obvious question ever. And yet, I think when you get into the mechanics of small talk, it's not so obvious how incredible this act we perform really is. You see, the genius of small talk, when you think about it, is not in what's said per se, but in what's unsaid. It's those moments of silence, those little pauses and gaps in conversations. You see, in small talk, the speaker, the people who are talking, it flips back and forward almost automatically. And the bizarre thing to me is there's no set of rules around that. We just engage in small talk naturally, unaware of how utterly remarkable the act really is. In small talk, the average amount of time somebody speaks is 2 seconds. That's it, 2 seconds before somebody else flips in. It can be something as simple as, good night, isn't it cold out? The next person, yeah, boy, it's really chilly this January. I mean, the time that we actually speak is about 2 seconds, but what's even more remarkable is the gap in between when somebody speaks and another person speaks is 200 milliseconds. That's all that it takes. That long of a pause, just 200 milliseconds, and somebody flips and moves into speaker role. And when you think about it that way, it's utterly fascinating to me. Stephen Levison says that it's the minimum human response time to anything. That amount of time, 200 milliseconds, is the same amount of time that it takes a sprinter to react to hearing the gun in a race. Bang, take off. It's the same amount of time, but here's the thing with sprinting and reacting to a gun. There's only one way forward. Gun, start running. In small talk, there's literally thousands of different routes and charts and paths that you could follow in the conversation. And that's what makes it remarkable, because in that 2 seconds while someone else is talking, we're not only actively listening, we're guessing at what they might say. We're formulating our response in 2 seconds. And within 200 milliseconds, we've jumped right into the conversation. Small talk, no matter what you think about it, it's kind of miraculous. Stephen Levison goes on to say, when you take into account the complexity of what's going on in these short terms, you start to realize that this is an elite behavior. Dolphins can swim amazingly fast, and eagles can fly as high as a jet, but this is our trick. Or Tanya Stiver says, she says this, everything points to what astute observers we are of every word choice, every phonetic change. I mean, regardless of what you think about small talk, or if you're one of those people like, oh, I hate small talk so much, it's dull, it's boring. Regardless of what you think about it, it's absolutely incredible what's happening underneath the surface of our heads during small talk. But what's even more amazing to me than just what small talk is what it does. There's this guy named Bronislaw Malachowski and something like that. He was one of the very first people to make the study of small talk into a bit of a science. And what he discovered was this, is most small talk is actually rather meaningless. In fact, he went on to describe small talk this way. Small talk is the purposeless expressions of preference or aversions, accounts of irrelevant happenings, and comments on what is perfectly obvious. I mean, that is so relatable. I mean, how many times every winter are you out shoveling? Have you ever had this happen and a neighbor says to you, oh my goodness, can you believe this weather? And you're thinking to yourself, it's January, it's snowing, we live in Canada, of course I can believe this weather. But the idea is that these comments, they're not about actually making an observation. They're meaningless observations. It's a point of contact. And this is where the art of small talk begins to reveal its hidden purpose. And what Malachowski went on to describe is that speech, actually there's two different kinds. There's speech as communication, like I'm doing now, but then there's speech as social bonding. And this is where you begin to see the power and importance of small talk. what researchers have discovered is that the point of small talk is not actually to convey information, it's to form social bonds. And you can begin to see when we start to understand this, why small talk is so incredibly important for communities, why being together on a Sunday morning, face to face, in the flesh, exchanging pleasantries, asking about the weather, why those things are so incredibly important to the life of a community. You know, there's this woman named Justine Copeland, and she's got this book out, and it's called Small Talk. Absolutely fascinating book, but what she's doing from a feminist critique is she's understanding and points out how what we've done is we've created a hierarchy of language, and I love her critique here. This is what she has to say. What primarily emerges from feminist critiques is the fact that Western societies have wholeheartedly accepted that communication is in fact value gradable on a scale from most to least authentic or most to least valid. An evaluative public conception of communication itself is strongly in place. Real talk is talk that gets stuff done, where stuff does not include relational stuff. Small talk is the language of relationships. It's the glue behind our social bonds. And when we understand this, we start to realize that this is something that you simply cannot replicate on screen, doing online church. It's something that requires people face-to-face, brief interactions, conversations that go back and forth 2 seconds at a time. As Justine Copeland goes on to note, every speech act is an act. Sometimes it's about communicating, but more often than not, with conversation, it's about reassuring, acknowledging, filling awkward pauses, comforting. And sometimes that's not just in our words, it's in the very simple act of speaking to one another. You see, the primary act of small talk is not about saying anything, it's about doing something. In small talk, the communication of ideas is almost incidental. What's happening with small talk is social bonding, seeing others, acknowledging, noticing. It's about creating bonds. I mean, consider again two of the one another passages in the New Testament. I mean, think about the way these words unfold and how small talk can actually fulfill these one another passages. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, encourage one another and build each other up. Or Ephesians 4, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. What kind of language is it that builds others up? And I mean, there's a ton of ways we could answer that question, right? There's the specific word that we say to someone to encourage them. But to be honest, small talk achieves a lot of this because we are encouraged simply by engaging in small talk, because it allows us to know we are seen, we're noticed, we're acknowledged. And I mean, this is one of the things that I think truly, as I've had 10 months to reflect on COVID, this is one of the things that I miss most. The small talk, being in person in the flesh with one another. And it's not about necessarily always having those deep or meaningful talks, but missing the, hello, how you doing? Hey, how about this weather? Those small acts of being seen and noticed and acknowledged, those small acts that create and fuse together social bonds between one another. We tend to think of meaningful talk as only having sort of these sort of big implications, but we have to understand small talk, you could say, is almost social bonding foreplay. I mean, if I came up to you and every time I chatted with you, I had some sort of deep question, how do you feel about your body? How's your body image? Or how's your soul doing? Or how's your relationship doing? I mean, that sort of stuff is good and needed. But to start with that or to dive straight into that, it can be way too intense. And so small talk functions as that little sort of grease that gets the wheels going in the context of community. And over COVID, I have missed that so much. What are we missing by being only together online? We're missing the social lubricant that is community. We're missing small talk. Those small moments of greeting one another, saying hello, carrying on a quick conversation about sports. All of the little ways that small talk reinforces that we're a community and we're in this together. So why is small talk so important? I mean, in case it's not already obvious, I mean, consider the author Sherry Turkle. She composed the book Alone Together, and in it, she makes the argument that the most important part of conversations are actually the boring parts. And she goes on to say that in the age of social media and text and email and all these millions of different ways that we can communicate, that something vital is being lost. She goes on to say this: instant communication has come at the expense of conversation. We're talking at each other rather than with each other. I love this line so much by her because it seems intuitively obvious to me. And you know, it starts to help me understand why I find social media almost jarring these days. I mean, social media is almost like walking into a social gathering and having people immediately start really weird conversations with you. It's like, hey, I hate Donald Trump. Here's the carrot cake I made. I wrote a poem, read it. Here's my view on politics. Here's me on vacation. Here are my cute kids. And it's like, oh my goodness, like no conversation starts that way. And yet, when we get into this world of social media, we're just bombarded by this like immediate in-your-face position, announcement, stance, whatever it is. And I think what Sherry Turtle understands is that conversation is actually way more messy than that. She goes on to say in her book that conversation, real conversation, is clumsy. There's awkward topic changes and there's clumsy exchanges and there's awkward silent parts. But what she sort of pushes for in this book is this understanding that that is really what conversation is made of, and real true social bonding actually happens in that context. And yet what the internet has done, as she says in her words, the internet favors showmanship over exchange, flows over ebbs, but that's not conversation. And I so love this because this is what she's advocating for, a celebration of the dull, a celebration of the awkward and the clumsy, because for her, that's where true social bonding happens. That's where true community happens. And so what are we missing right now in COVID? It's not just that we're locked down, it's that we're missing the true essence of community. And 10 months into this, friends, as we begin a new year, I'm missing that now more than ever. Friends, as we roll into 2021 with the hope and prospect of this being done sometime this year, I hope you remember and know that what we've lost in this pandemic is more than our freedom to go shopping at certain times. What we're missing is the heartbeat of community. And I want to sort of, over the next few weeks, point out more about what makes community, again, through Wolves and the Book of Acts. It's going to be great. But what we're missing is each other and the gentle ways that chit-chat forms social cohesion and bonds. What we're missing together right now is what Richard Beck defines as community, standing around drinking coffee together when we'd probably rather be somewhere else. For now, we wait. We continue online. But my hope, my trust, is that someday soon we will be together. And I can't tell you how looking forward I am to simply asking you, how about the weather? Friends, I hope you had a wonderful few weeks ringing in the new year and celebrating Christmas and the holidays together. I look forward to what's ahead in 2021. For now, go in peace.